Hello and welcome to another episode of Linux Lads. This is Season 6, Episode 18. And as always, I'm joined by Mike. Say hello, Mike.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we're not joined by Shane. So after all of the delay, and people in the Telegram group will know about this, we said, hey guys, we're taking a bit of a break. Shane is up to shenanigans with redecorating his house. Turns out that the shenanigans are still happening. So for this episode, at least, we're not joined by Shane. But I believe I won't be the person editing, so there won't be any editing mix-ups like there was last time. Again, people in the Telegram and those early people who downloaded it, apologies. But yeah, there was a bit of an editing mix-up that I thought I had sorted, but when we clicked publish, turns out I didn't have sorted. So there was a bit of a frantic backpedal on that. So apologies for that. So we might as well get into it. What has been up with me of late is I have been testing out new web browsers. I was using Brave for a very long time. And something in the back of my mind, forget at the moment what it actually was, but something said, yeah, fancy bit of a change. I fancied going back to Firefox. Firefox seemed to be fine, snappy. I'm on Manjaro, so I was getting the very latest version of Firefox. Even installed the Firefox beta, which is in the AUR, and all that seemed to be fine. Little minor thing was that when I went into Reddit and went to click on in the Reddit enhancement suite, I don't know if you can do this by default with just normal Reddit, but as you're scrolling down, you can see a little media preview. And if there's a video somebody's sharing from TikTok or Snap or whatever the young kids are into these days, and you can preview inline. And it just refused to work in Firefox. Could be the dozen or so add-ons that have accumulated over the years, because I sync down my profile with my bookmarks and my add-ons anytime I sign into Firefox. Could have been one of those is borking it. But in Brave, it seemed to be fine. And I'm trying out Vivaldi. I know Vivaldi is negative in the freedom dimension, but I seem to be liking Vivaldi for the time being. So I'm trying out new browsers, and I'm trying out what the current browser situation is. So if anyone has any suggestions, feel free to ping in your suggestions. But at the moment, I'm kind of between Brave, Firefox, and Vivaldi, but open to alternatives. Mike, have you been up to anything?
Yeah, I've got a new company laptop, and my employer allows to install pretty much any operating system that you are capable in working in. So I installed, I want to say Antergos. I keep calling it Antergos even after all these years. It's Endeavor OS. I installed Endeavor OS, and to me, it's nice, but thinking about this whole thing, like how to, and there's a, because there's been a discussion in the chat, how do we introduce Linux to people who are not yet using it? The installation process, and it doesn't matter if it's Linux or Windows or Mac, or if anybody ever installs anything on a Mac, and I don't know. But basically, installation process is not something that new people probably want to be encountering as soon as they are interested in trying out a new thing. So I'm thinking it's fine for me, but if I was giving a Linux PC to somebody and wanting them, if I was introducing somebody to Linux and wanting them to have a good time, I'd probably just point them to the nearest Linux vendors. Otherwise, try to obtain a computer for them with Linux pre-installed, and then make sure that they can get support. But as by the way, going back to your browsers, I think Vivaldi is now the on new Manjaro installs. Vivaldi is the default browser now, so I must be doing something good.
My latest information on that, there could be something since then, is that it was in the Manjaro Cinnamon Edition, which was a community edition. I think they're kind of testing the waters to see what the community feedback would be. And they probably suggested or tried it in a community edition and not one of their main editions. So if there's major blowback, which there seems to be, then they can make their decision about whether they're going to make it the mainline one or not. I think they had similar thing where they introduced a proprietary office suite, free office, and that is still, I think it was by default, but now they give you an option in the installer, so they heard the feedback. I installed Manjaro quite recently in a virtual machine because I was trying out the Manjaro Mate edition just for shits and giggles in a virtual machine. And in the installation process, this was only in the last week or two, still had the pane where it says, do you want us to install an office suite? Do you want free office? Do you want LibreOffice? Or do you want no office suite? Like if you want to install your own at a later stage. So they might be doing something similar with Vivaldi. I do not know if there's a revenue sharing agreement in this. I imagine that there might be, considering that, and my understanding is with FreeOffice, there is a revenue sharing agreement. Like we're paying you to promote our office suite. Vivaldi may be paying them or giving them some kind of kickback for promoting Vivaldi. I can understand the, it's very difficult to get solid, sustainable revenue model for these Linux distributions. I know that Elementary OS is doing their own thing, and Zorin OS is doing something along the same vein of, hey, if you want extra features, we do have our pro edition that you can pay whatever it is, 15, 20 bucks or what. I don't know what the figure is off the top of my mind. You can pay X amount of euro to download the pro edition, and with that you get extra features, you get kind of support, you can email us and we'll come back to you because you've a pro edition, or more readily. I'm not saying that they wouldn't come back to you if you just downloaded the free edition. Those little incentives in order to finance the distribution. Manjaro, I do not know how they're monetizing, if it's a donation model up until now, if they've alternative means of doing it. I believe they're also doing OEM partnerships, weren't they? Mike, you might be able to recall this. Were they doing partnerships with Tuxedo Computers about installing Manjaro by default? So there might be some revenue sharing agreement in there as well.
Yeah, definitely from that. I think from Starlabs possibly. And I think they were also getting some, if not big, but some kickbacks from the Pine phones. Talking of which, wanted to smoothly segue.
Speaking of segues, there's a new PinePhone.
There's a new PinePhone Pro, yeah, with the chipset from the PineBook Pro, 4 gigs of RAM, if I'm not mistaken, costs about $400, and it's basically like the PinePhone, but it's better and faster, basically.
Yeah, this is something that is very, very badly needed, I would say. A lot of the criticism of the original PinePhone is that it seemed to be quite slow and stuttery. I'm not saying that the hardware isn't capable of running the images that are on it with all the nice effects and so on, but I'd imagine that there will be several years and like of just developer refinement saying, okay, we need to optimize the shit out of this image so that the performance kind of looks good on it. you could do that or revise the hardware, which seems to be what they're doing at the moment. They're not discontinuing the old PinePhone. They said they're going to keep running that. And I was poking around on their website, and one of the frequently asked questions is because this is using the same chipset as the PineBook Pro, would this have similar performance as the PineBook Pro? And they say because of the packaging and cooling and so on, it might be a 20% hit in performance versus the PineBook Pro. But that is still quite fast for a mobile chipset, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never actually tried the original PinePhone. I'm not seeing myself buying this. Just basically, I can't use it as a daily driver, and for the reasons of banking apps and chat clients, as we thoroughly discussed in this podcast before. And I don't think I can justify a $400 toy. You know, I have plenty of toys and no time to play with them. So unfortunately, I'm gonna have to pass on this. But fair play to Pine for sticking to their products and being successful, which is something like, you know, before they came around with this kind of business model, you wouldn't. Although that is, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think that a Linux phone is a successful business proposition. Of course, there is the, what is it, not the free phone, what are they called? Purism. There is the Purism, I just dropped the name from my memory.
Librem 5, I think it was.
Yes, sorry. There is the Purism Librem 5, but we don't know if that makes any money because they have other business as well. Actually, probably does. We can say the same about Pine 64. They also have other business, but I assume, you know, before these two companies came about, and with all the things that I don't like about the Purism company.
And also the Librem 5 is like $70 billion.
Oh, yeah, no, that one's expensive. Although, the PinePhone Pro is more than halfway there now, unless you count the Librem 5 USA edition, which is apparently $2,000, but I think that's more of a, I don't know what. But anyway, I think both companies kind of prove that you can actually market a Linux-only or Linux-first phone, which is interesting. That's not something we would have predicted 5 years ago when, I think it was 5 years ago, when Canonical tried to fundraise, to crowdsource enough money to get going with their Ubuntu Edge, or whatever the phone was called. You know, and they did find a niche, so fair play to them. You know, that has to be said, that they did. They must be doing something right.
It's definitely from the security point of view, a security and privacy point of view. Apparently, we're going way back when the Purism were doing their Librem 5 crowdsourcing, forget which platform they're using, but whichever one was Kickstarter or Indiegogo, whichever one they were using, people were suspicious that they're saying, oh, in periodic stages during their crowdfunding, they seem to just magically get the numbers that they were, like, they're saying, let's say if they were halfway through their goal, I think there was multiple, what I'm trying to get at, I think there was multiple extensions, like if we meet this, then we can do this, if we meet this, we can, and they seem to magically kind of meet them at every single stage, and that seemed to be highly suspect. And then the rightly or wrongly, I don't know how accurate this is, but the CEO afterwards said, oh, that's because we were getting large contracts, large orders from enterprise, of people had it as a condition, if you meet this goal of so many viable units, we're going to put in an order of 5,000 units or something like that. And then that is what made the numbers jump. And they said that they were getting them quite regularly. Like, if you meet this goal, then we're going to put in our chips in because of the security aspect to it. So there's definitely a niche there, certainly from secure IT privacy from an enterprise point of view. So I would imagine that there would be those kind of enterprise deals being done, as not just the consumer facing sides that we see. So there's definitely that. But from a consumer, as Mike says, there's certain applications such as banking applications or chat applications, namely WhatsApp and the like. I know most people listening to this podcast probably don't like WhatsApp, but the reality is it's extremely popular in Europe. For most non-tech people, as in parents, aunts, uncles, cousins, your wider extended family, they're all on freaking WhatsApp. So you'd be a social hermit if you decided that you were going to cut all ties with WhatsApp. Unfortunately, I wish it was a different situation. So there's that, and your banking applications, and they do MFA through their own application. It's not the case of you can use whatever MFA application that you can pick. I mean, my work does Office 365 and all the prompts say download Microsoft Authenticator, but there's a little link towards the bottom, or use your own MFA app. And I use Authy, I think it's called, Authy, on Android, and that does multiple MFAs, so I don't have to download Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator, yada yada yada, and it just scans the QR code just like any of the other authenticators. If the bank was happy with that, then I would be happy with that too. But the banks seem to do their MFA through their own application, and I'd imagine that's for security reasons, and they probably have the reasoning behind that. But those applications are only for iOS and Android. So if you're not on any of those two platforms, you're hosed. It's not the case of you can authenticate through your desktop computer and on your browser. You can't do that because you need to send a code to something else, which is invariably for your phone. So if they can get Anbox, or I think there's a alternative, something for running Android apps that's an alternative to Anbox, get one of those working and can get your WhatsApps and your banking applications working, then it becomes a more viable solution for me. The performance they're addressing in this new version, so that is a step in the right direction for me. I was looking through their website and they did not mention if it was single SIM or dual SIM. I'm imagining because they didn't list it as a feature, it's not dual SIM. It's probably just safe to assume that it's single SIM. I tend to like dual SIMs because I have a work SIM card and my personal SIM card, and I can't be arsed lugging around two phones around with me when I'm in work. What if I want to respond to a telegram on my personal phone and then have my work phone beside me as well, and juggling two phones? So I'll keep them all in one phone. So yeah, long rant on that one, but that would be where I would be comfortable purchasing a Linux alternative phone. And at the price point, I've no objections to the price point. That seems to be the correct price point for these things. The €400-500 thereabouts price point, if it meets those hurdles for me, I would be happy then with purchasing that.
I'm not sure if... So you talked about like application support, and before that you talked about security. And I don't know, and this is maybe my last word on this, I don't know if, for example, you were able to install applications using some Anbox or some maybe emulating layer on... on Linux phones like you do on Android ones, if you would just be able to download APK. I don't know if Linux has, like, how far Linux has for the native applications, how secure it is in the kind of same sense that Android does security through isolation of applications, right? And I don't know if you all, if even including snaps and flatpaks, if we actually have all the bits in there for the phone to be internally secure. We know that it's, if you give somebody a Linux phone, then it's probably more secure because Google cannot be, or Facebook, or it will have harder time of snooping on you, and B, they cannot just take any old APK and install their particular, you know, pink WhatsApp clone. But if that went away, would Linux phones still be as secure as Android? I'm not sure. It would actually take an expert to explain this, probably.
Yeah, that's very true. And Mike, you know that I have done the experiment of running Google apps less as much as I can on phones that I've had previously. I've done the like the F-Droid and the Aurora store for getting into the Play Store. And whatever the open implementation, I forget what it is off the top of my head, whatever the open implication of the, you know, the Play Store.
Well, the GApps or?
No, do you know the, mind is drawing a blank at the moment.
F-Droid for?
No, it's the Play Services. Do you know the thing that runs in the background? Do you know there's an open...
Don't they call it something like MicroG, or I don't remember what it's actually called.
Oh yes, it's MicroG. I think it is. It's MicroG. Whatever that is, and I installed that. Interesting enough is that I sideloaded my banking application, and that seemed to be work. I'm not going to give that bank free advertising, but Mike, you know which bank I'm referring to. I did install Sideload. I actually think I got it from the Aurora store. I just searched for that banking application, installed it, and it seemed to be fine. So that doesn't seem to require the MicroG layer. So there is potentially a way of doing it if they can get F-Droid running within the Antbox or whatever solution they come up with, and then the Aurora store from F-Droid for for those who don't know, the Aurora store is a alternative front end to the Play Store, and it's legally questionable about whether they're able to do this. So in their first screen they say, do you want to browse the Play Store anonymously if you just want to download free applications, there's no sign in required, or do you want to sign in using your Google account so that your previous installation history comes down and any of your previously purchased applications comes down. So if you purchased an application in the past on a different phone and then you're trying it on this, then you could just say, yep, we recognize you've purchased this application, you can download it again. They say, warning, here be dragons, Google could possibly ban your account for doing this. But so far, I've never received any of any problems doing that using the Aurora store. But I'm passing on their warning to anyone who's thinking about considering downloading F-Droid and then the Aurora store as a alternative to using the Google Play Store. But yeah, it seemed to be viable if they can get Antbox running. And an interesting thing is if they then, but because these phones are just running Linux, they're just running Manjaro, or they're just running Ubuntu Touch or whatever, they're effectively running just a Linux kernel. They're running Linux. So possibly you could just download your Anbox and then your banking application onto your PC and do the MFA through that method. So if they could get that working, then there'll be an additional layer of convenience of the bank wanting you to send an MFA code, and you have said banking application running in on your PC, so you could do everything from your PC without even having to look at your phone. So in anniversary news, KDE is 25 years old and Yola is 10 years old. So happy birthday to KDE and happy birthday to Yola.
Yeah, I've seen on the KDE's 25 anniversary webpage, they are getting ready downloads of VirtualBox images of historic versions. Now they have 3 and 4, but KDE 1 and KDE 2 are coming. And so for those of you who are, I don't know what, so for those of you who are nostalgic, it will be there and you'll be just able to run it in VirtualBox. I don't know what they are basing it on, if it's based on Ubuntu or if it's the same base as KDE Neon, but if you are missing KDE 3.5, go and download it.
Then install the Trinity desktop environment. And I didn't like KDE 3 and I didn't really like KDE 4. My own personal opinion. The only time that KDE became viable for me was KDE 5. But that's all my own personal opinion. But for those who are interested, those images will be up. And if you want to go down through a nostalgic trip, then you can run them in a VirtualBox image. And Yola being 10. So that's interesting. So that is sort of related to us talking about mobile phones. For those who don't know, Yola is the company behind Sailfish, which is they have taken a code base that was originally started by Nokia, and I think there's a bit of Intel had some involvement in it as well. It's got a Migo, MIMO, Tizen, all kind of shared the same origins and code base and everything like that. And some people don't like it because there is their UI layer and their UI elements, their design is proprietary to them. So the underlying code is open source, but their UX experience, for the way that they swipe things and the way they handle the interaction with the phone and their design, their icons and so on, is proprietary in Sailfish. So some people don't like it for that reason. I believe, is it Nemo OS is pretty much doing the same thing, except their UI layer is open source rather than proprietary.
Yeah, I don't actually know. Thanks to a friend of the show, Adam Pig, who let us know about this.
And also recently received an award from, was it Sailfish or was it Yola? And in his absence, so congratulations to Adam Pig.
Yeah, they appreciate his developer effort in for his project, which is great. I've never actually tried it. One of these days I have to, but on what? Not sure.
I have a phone floating around and I think I've made this offer to you before, but you've never taken me up on it. But yeah, that's fine too, because it's at the moment it pretty much just sits in a drawer. So I have it on a Xperia XA2, which is one of their officially supported devices. And by officially supported devices, I mean that they have their own Android compatibility layer, which I believe is based on the Android 8 SDK. I don't know if it has been updated since. So in theory, anything that targets Android 8 and above should work on the officially supported Yola phones.
Yeah, that's very good. Next one up, another kind of, not an anniversary, but another time-based event. Ubuntu 2010 Impish Indri is out. I wanted to try today using Martin Wimpress's QuickEMU as I was sitting through lectures in my university. Unfortunately, I couldn't get it working, and since I could only pay half my mind to it and keeping the other half on whatever I was learning, then I didn't get to try Impish Indri. Have you had the chance to try that, Connor?
I've not had a chance to try it at all, unfortunately. I have seen a couple of videos on it. So it's running Wayland by default, and some other little
GNOME 40.
GNOME 40 and some other little things. Which would perfectly and utterly make sense because it's the version that's before the LTS. So they want to get big changes out of the way so they can refine upon these big changes, and then when the LTS comes out, says, okay, we've had 6 months worth of kicking the tires on both of these big technologies, so we in theory should have 90% of any of the niggles ironed out before the ultra stable LTS release comes out.
And the next LTS release code name is out as well. They are going to call it Jemmy Jellyfish, which is nice. For the LTS 2204.
So this is not just referring to the fruit preserve that you would push on your toast in the morning. There is an I don't know if that is their sole intention for this, but there's an extra layer of when you've referred to somebody as a jammy bastard, it is usually somebody that you're envious of. And so if somebody drives by you in an open top Ferrari or something like that, and you refer to him as a jammy bastard, that means that you're envious of his position. So I don't know if that is an unintended interpretation of this, or well, knowing that Canonical is a British company, then there probably was that element in it as well, whether they want to officially acknowledge that or not.
Is there another layer to it? I'm not that familiar with American slang, but don't they call jelly, isn't jelly the American word for jam? So Jemmy Jellyfish, I think so. If you have peanut butter and jelly, there's basically peanut butter and jam, no?
Yeah, I know that it applies in that case, but I do not know. Do you know the jelly that we would refer to as jelly, which is the gelatinous wobbly thing that you give to kids? I'm pretty sure they refer to that as jelly as well. So I don't know if the American slang can be very confusing for us.
Yeah, maybe some Americans can write to the show and explain to us what a jelly is and how it's related to jams, marmalade, and jellyfishes.
So, in no surprise to anybody, Linus Sebastian has encountered some of the toxic Linux community members. He predicted this was going to happen. Everyone and their mother predicted that this was going to happen, and it happened. He said even the people who were reassuring him, saying, yeah, it's going to be fine, don't worry about it, it's a very wholesome community.
actually, somebody said that. All right.
I don't think he was directly quoting them, but he was paraphrasing what they were saying. Yeah. People can get quite opinionated in the Linux community. And for people who are listening to this podcast, you're in the Linux community, so I'm sure you know this yourselves. My own personal take on it is that 95% higher, of anybody that I've ever encountered in Linux, thankfully, has been reasonable, down to earth, quite friendly, quite open to new people, quite open to questions and explaining things and everything like that. And I've met several of these people in person and had beers with them in Ogg Camp and Fostock Live and so on. But yeah, there is definitely a element of keyboard warriors out there who will bash you for simply picking a different desktop environment to them, or bash you for you picking a different distro to your own. Oh my God, you committed the crime of against of the absolute century. You picked Fedora over Ubuntu. Like, for anyone who's that finickety, get a fucking grip, guys. But yeah, he apparently Linus has encountered these people, and he said in his defense he has a very peculiar hardware setup. So he says he's running into a lot of issues that probably 70 to 80% plus, possibly 90% of people out there will never come across. He says he has a very panicky hardware setup with a lot of lightning cables and monitors, and essentially what he does is he is so against noise, he's so adverse to noise, and he likes a big powerful machine. So a big powerful machine is going to create a lot of noise. Is he puts his big powerful machine in the server room in the area where there is a server, so it's going to be making lots of noise anyway, so it's in the noise area. And then he routes long cables to his part. It's essentially if a thin client or a remote terminal for his PC, but it's quite short, as in it's only a couple of meters of cabling, but there's that isolation enough is for him. I believe that is what his custom setup is at home. And so yeah, it's quite finickety, and he was having issues. I do not know the extent of what is the issues that he's having, but because they're very good at talking about videos that there is in the pipeline for being released, and they may be not released for another month because that just happens to be their schedule queue or whatever, that it has to go through editing or script revisions or whatever. So yeah, they could be talking about something that the video is not out, due to be out for another month or two. So
I understand his frustration. So he goes, they have a challenge with Luke in the one show. So they both install Linux, try to game on it, and the first one to say, no, I can't handle this, and goes back to Windows. I don't know what they agreed on, but basically loses the bet, right? And yeah, so he has a difficult setup. He is extremely used to working with Windows. Like, the guy does his living, right? And he's been on it for years and years. And that's, he acknowledged that. He's like, well, he said in that video, if I'm saying that Linux is shit at this, I also have to acknowledge that actually Windows is shit at this, and that he kind of said that he tends to ignore it because that's how just things are. But if you are, you know, he talks about Steam notifications taking up things, taking up estate on the screen, and other things that are the same on Linux and Windows. So he's acknowledging this. I think he's approaching it from a very fair point of view.
But he is, yeah.
And he encounters problems because installing Linux, it's not hard, but it's not something that you need to do if you just go and buy a PC. And it's different from installing Linux, Windows, right? So, and then he goes and encounters, well, the Linux community, which is just like any other community in the world. There is lots of very nice people. And then there's, I don't know if you said 5% or whatever, there are people who have got a gripe and who will just not be shy of telling him what they think he should be doing, shouldn't be doing, and what are the not nice things he thinks about them. Maybe it's worse in the Linux community. I don't know. I don't actually have a personal experience. Whatever we do with our chat, or whatever we had feedback from people here, or whatever we do through the Dublin Linux community, everything is very nice, right? I've never actually encountered an uncivilized person talking about Linux. But then again, I don't necessarily spend a lot of time on social media because, and I don't tend to ask questions online. I'm just, I usually when I have a problem, somebody's already solved it. So I don't need to go and ask. So I don't get told to read a fucking manual. Right.
One interjection I will say on that is a lot of the general Linux subreddits, again, I do not frequent these, so I do not know if things have improved, things have disimproved, but they, my last encounter with these communities, and I don't go into them, so this is just by reputation, is things like r/Linux, they can be a bit, read the fucking manual, and but there are more wholesome ones. The distro specific subreddit seems to be perfectly utterly fine. If you go into Ubuntu, if you're running Ubuntu, if you run Manjaro Linux for the Manjaro, and Solus for the Solus, and so on and so forth. I'm sure, I don't know if there's a Fedora one, I don't know if there's an elementary OS one. I'm sure if there are, then they're perfectly wholesome and they're perfectly willing to help you out and everything like that, but the general ones tend to be quite gatekeeping and toxic, and as by reputation, again, I do not frequent these, so I cannot comment on this from personal experience. So much so that Linux underscore gaming seems to be the exception of it's a general one, but seems to be quite fine. And so much so that even though it's a Linux underscore gaming, you'd imagine that it's all about gaming. And for the vast majority of time, it mostly is about gaming. But because it has a reputation of being a nice and helpful subreddit, some people just sometimes just ask general questions. And they're a nice subreddit, so they try to be accommodating when they can be, but with the caveat of, guys, you do know this is a gaming subreddit. This is not just, yeah, so like, there's a keep this in mind, but what's your issue kind of thing. But they seem to be nice. They seem to try and help people out. But other ones do have a very bad reputation. I think, believe the r/Linux one is very, we're sysadmins, where we all know our shit. How did you dare come in here with just an Ubuntu UI question? Go to the Ubuntu subreddit if you want to ask those kind of questions.
I don't know, right? I scroll through my Reddit and I see some kind of I basically judge by the pictures and by the headlines, and if I don't like the post title, then I don't go in there, because I'm, for the purposes of my personal mental health, I'm avoiding places where people turn nasty, because why would I waste time of that, right? But there is another thing that he said. He's like, he's talking about advice that he was given, and he's like, yeah, what is a DE? And what is a distro, right? And people picked up on it, and even in our chat, Paul, I think, said that it would be good to drop these terms, but then I kind of can't see it, right? So these terms exactly exist because they reflect the fraction, they reflect the diversity within Linux, or the fragmentation, whichever way you're looking at it, right? We need these terms to be able to say, to describe things that exist. And it is, and he has a point, it is a problem when you are trying to put a new person in front of Linux. So, that's your DE, or what is a DE, what is a distro? You know, so it obviously, it is worse in Linux world than it can be in Windows, because there is one DE, or on the Mac because there is one DE, and there are no distributions of Windows. Are there any distributions of Windows? I don't think so. You have got versions, but
It's proprietary, so they would, if there was a different spin of Windows, then it would be coming from Microsoft, in which case, why would they be doing a different spin of Windows? And if there's a different spin of Windows, that is not coming from Microsoft. See you in court, and we're going to see you out of existence.
Yeah, that's true, actually. My brain just froze, and if I thought it through, I wouldn't have even asked a stupid question. So basically, yes. So there are distributions in Linux, and we need to describe them somehow. And it might just mean that we will never be able to basically give people an ISO and say, just do your thing. It should be easy, because it isn't easy, and we need to acknowledge that, right? And it might be that... that people who want to use Linux will basically have to do some learning, right? Unfortunately, and that's, I don't, you know, and there is a difference between acknowledging this fact that we need to have to be able to have a language for the things and describe the differences between distros, devices, you know, toolkits, and so on, and between gatekeeping, where we would basically prevent people from joining until you do your fucking homework, son, right? So we need to strike a balance there. And as I say, I understand there is no we, right? There is just individuals, because we don't have a hive mind. But let's keep in mind that there are both sides to it, and people shouldn't be nasty. But there's only as much as we can simplify it. It cannot go all the way, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to summarize this by saying that both of these two guys, both Linus and Luke, have combined, but potentially individually also, decades worth of experience in computing and building computers and having these kind of issues, display driver issues, all of these things. They're both very experienced and technical users, and they're also communicators. Linus has made his living communicating this knowledge to people on YouTube, so he's also very aware of new people who might have issues with using a computer. He's done in-depth videos on how to assemble a computer. He's done challenges of a completely new member of his staff who's not very technical at all, might be in the sales and marketing department of his because he also sells t-shirts and so on. So there'll be a design, sales, marketing, customer support side of things, because he has an online store as well. But there are still his employees, so he's like, hey, this will be an interesting video if I could take this new hire who's in their early 20s and put all of the PC components in front of them and see how well they do. And that will be an interesting video from an entertaining point of view if they mess things up, but also from an education point of view. So he's very much approaching it from... he approaches his company and his whole existence of explaining computers to new people, particularly like very complicated concepts. So I would imagine he'd be a very good steward of this challenge. We acknowledge he's definitely coming from a very Windows heavy background, but I would imagine he's going to do this quite fairly, and he will criticize the hell out of Linux if criticism is due, and I'm sure it is due. And he will also, I would imagine, flip things around and say, oh, I liked this about Linux and Windows, you don't do this thing at all. I'm going to criticize the hell out of Windows because you don't do this thing that I liked in Linux. I'm sure he's going to be completely, utterly impartial from me watching his videos. And what the Luke seemed to be quite knowledgeable, at least had some exposure to the terms. He said the last time he ran Linux Mint was probably about 5 to 10 years ago, but he has dipped his toe in a bit. But they've also said they have Anthony. But Anthony's not going to be involved. Anthony's not going to be helping them. This is their own struggles. This is their own things. But they said in their final video, it's going to be these two guys presenting their thing, and in the video, not communicating with either of the two guys, but in the video will be Anthony watching the footage and making his own comments as well. So you will get a guy who's very knowledgeable in Linux, it seems to be, from me watching his videos as well, commenting on what they did wrong and how they could have improved things as well. So I'm quite looking forward to that video whenever it does come out. So I'd imagine he's going to be a very good steward of this. And it's good that he's going to be a very good steward of this, because this guy literally has millions of subscribers. He's one of the most popular YouTube channels on YouTube. Mike, any final thoughts on that? I was just going to move on to Mozilla VPN.
It is good that he does that. He doesn't have, like, I think the reason why they do this, also one of the reasons, is that because the upcoming Steam Deck is obviously going to be running Linux.
True, true.
I think this is an incomparable experience. The Steam Deck is kind of, I give you a console and you don't really care what's on it. It plays your games, right? And you don't care. For a small minority of people, they will be modding it and everything. But most people, if it works as it's intended, the Steam Deck, you're going to be getting it, you're going to use it as a console, and you won't have to install Linux. You won't have to go down to the command line and put any commands in there. You, or at least if I understand how it's meant to work, you won't have to, get NVIDIA drivers from somewhere, because there is no NVIDIA in it, and it's all going to be sold as an appliance, as a thing. So it's more akin to go and get a console, to go get a Windows PC, or to go and getting a Mac. So to me, what he's experiencing there, if everything, if the stars line up and the Steam Deck does as well as Valve probably wants it to, then there's going to be a lot of new Linux users who won't have this kind of experience when they get slagged for choosing the wrong DE, because they won't be choosing any DE. There will be a lot of Linux users who won't go and ask questions only to be told to RTFM, because they won't need to ask any questions. This is actually, at least my hope is, even though I'm probably not going to buy one because I'm not a gamer, but my hope is that they will create an appliance with this Steam Deck, there's going to be a lot of new Linux users who won't be affected by any of this community or hardness, any of this shit.
So, in other news, Mozilla VPN has now been released in Ireland. So, for our US users and I believe British users as well, you've kind of had this for a while. But now it seems to be an opportunity to try it out, and I've not yet tried it out, but it's an interesting concept. The way I found out about this is I joined the waiting list, and then I got an email saying, hey, Mozilla VPN is now available in Ireland. It seems to be quite reasonable from a VPN point of view. I'm looking at it, it's €4.99 a month if you go for the 12-month plan. If it'll be $9.99 if you're just doing it on a month-by-month basis, or $6.99 if you're doing it on a six-month basis. I poked around. They seem to say if you're on Linux, it's a .deb designed for Ubuntu. I haven't even downloaded it. I don't even know if it comes as a .deb. It just says, hey, if you're on Linux, it should work with Ubuntu. Thumbs up. So I genuinely don't know if this is literally a Firefox add-on and it only is a VPN when you're using Firefox and you've toggled the little slider on the add-on, or is this an actual desktop application. You'd imagine that if it's a VPN, it should be a desktop application, because you want to encrypt all of your traffic, not just the traffic that is going through the browser, or the fact that you have to open up the browser and then toggle the toggle, and then you're encrypted. So I warrants further investigation, but On the face of things, provided that it is a desktop application and that that desktop application can run on other Linux distributions such as Arch-based distros or Fedora or anything like that, or RPM-based distros, then I don't see any reason why this couldn't be a viable VPN for anyone who's interested on the market for VPNs at the moment, which I'm currently not, but I could try it out for the sake of a tenner to try it out for a month. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I might do. I mean, I don't necessarily use VPN much as well. I mean, actually, that's not true. I use VPN every day, but it's the, you know, one provided by my employer to log into the office. So that's
that's the same with myself. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't have much use for it. I think the biggest differentiator here from all the other VPNs is the brand. It's Mozilla, so you kind of would hope that this is really privacy focused, because there is, you know, with VPNs there's a lot of scope for dodginess, and hopefully Mozilla won't. Hopefully the Mozilla brand means that this is a trustworthy piece of technology, and that they have the funds and the know-how to keep it running without problems, and it should be a good product.
From my point of view, even though we had this discussion about web browsers earlier, and I'm trying out different web browsers, so I can compartmentalize my opinion on this separate from the Firefox browser. If the Firefox browser isn't quite working for me, and I have a preference of using another web browser such as Brave or Vivaldi or something else, that to my mind would be a separate opinion of whether I want to support the Mozilla enterprise itself. So I would consider, certainly, aside from whether I use Firefox or not, using this as a VPN, because I generally like the idea of supporting Mozilla as an organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense as well.
So hopefully they do have a desktop client and that Firefox is not required. All right, I think it's time to wrap things up. As always, I've been Connor.
I've been Mike.
And see you next time. I was going to say same bat time, same bat channel, but we can't guarantee that this at this stage. But hopefully a more predictable cadence should return by the next one and then going forward. It just seems to be that we have been very disruptive over the past month or so. So apologies for that, but hopefully more predictable cadence should follow beginning the next release.